This is All About Living with Carol Colby. All About Living is brought to you by Gunderson Funeral Home Cremation Care, Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, Home Health United, The Medicine Shop Monona, Independent Living. All About Living with Carol Colby.
Good afternoon and welcome again to All About Living. I'm Carol Colby. Always a pleasure to have you with us. And remember, if you're not able to tune in at noon on Saturdays, this program is also available. You can stream actually live if you're out of Madison and in some other state and still don't want to miss your All About Living. You can stream it live on WTDY.com or it will be posted next week, this particular program, and each week the programs are posted on CarolCobyRadio.com. That's Carol Coby, K-O-B-Y, radio.com. So we try to be conveniently available to you at a time that is best for you to listen. And this is a very special program. Actually, I'll tell you in advance, this program is being taped, and it's being taped in August. And it's a window of time that our guests are here, because when you hear this program, they will be well settled in Austin, Texas. And I suspect perhaps making notes at this particular time for the lecture on Monday's classes. But joining me today are Jeremy Suri and his wife, Allison Alter. And for the past 10 years, Jeremy has been here at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and he has been the E. Gordon Fox Professor of History at the University of Wisconsin, a very prestigious chaired position, and has had many, many other responsibilities as well. He's been one of those UW academic persons that's been all over the community. He believes in outreach to diverse populations and people, and you certainly walked the walk as well as talked the talk, Jeremy. So we are going to miss him greatly, but he and his wife, Allison, have moved on to the University of Texas at Austin. The university is also losing Allison and has lost Allison in this move. Allison herself was associated with the University of Wisconsin in Madison. She left the position as development director for the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters, which is a 141-year-old nonprofit that connects people and ideas for a better Wisconsin. And so I know through this program, we're going to be doing some more conversations on what the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters is all about. And it actually operates independently from the university and the system, so it stands on its own. And before that, Allison, you were associate director of the UW-Madison Center for World Affairs and the Global Economy, better known as WAGE, W-A-G-E, the acronym. You are also entering the University of Texas at Austin with a new position. They were as eager to get you as they were to get your husband, Jeremy.
Maybe more so.
Yes, maybe it was the entrance to you, and then, oh, you have a husband, and he teaches history. Well, let's see if we can find something for him. But Allison will be Director of Strategic Planning for the Dell Social Innovation Competition, which is run out of the University of Texas at Austin. But from what I understand, that also is separate from the university or operates as an independent function.
It runs through the university, but its funding largely comes from Dell.
Mm-hmm. So we want to hear more about that and why Jeremy is no longer going to be the renowned acclaimed history professor at the University of Wisconsin, but will be at the University of Texas at Austin. He is an acclaimed scholar of international history. And beginning this fall, he is the first holder of the Mack Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership in Global Affairs at the Robert S. Strauss Center for International Security and Law, with a joint appointment at the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs and the History Department at the College of Liberal Arts at the University of Texas at Austin. Did you take the job because of the title that they gave you? Anybody with a title that long, it has to be the most prestigious job in the United States.
Well, or maybe not, or what my grandmother would have said is such a long title, so little accomplishment.
Oh, well, that's hardly true, but it is, and this is a new new chair, a new position chair, the Mac Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership, which is kind of interesting because when you were here, you did have a few years on the athletic board at the University of Wisconsin, and there were some controversial times where you questioned the athletic board and the power it had. And here the Mac Brown was a football coach.
Yeah, he is the football coach. And it is interesting in that Mac has lent his name to fundraising for academic positions now at the university and has in fact put up some money from the athletic department to help fund new faculty positions. I think he recognizes that the strength of the academics at the university will help reinforce what he's doing with athletics there. And I hope he believes, I don't know this for a fact, but I hope and think he believes that actually an all-around strong university is good for everyone. And I hope other people on other campuses will start to think the same way.
Well, hopefully that it isn't an either or.
No, I think universities are, to me, about the Renaissance ideal of encouraging excellence in an interdisciplinary way. I mean, a citizen of the world is someone who's well-read, is someone who writes well, someone who plays an instrument, someone who plays sports. I believe in that kind of Leonardo da Vinci model, and I hope we encourage that in our young people.
Well, in fact, for artists, I know that they encourage them to go forward and get a liberal arts education versus just majoring in art or majoring in something that they want to paint or play.
So, Carol, they can do many things from radio to all sorts of other things.
Only in the shower when nobody is listening. And I'd like to go back just a little personally. 10 years you were here at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and you both came here. Allison, you came already armed with a PhD degree from Harvard.
I actually started out teaching at University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee.
Science department
when we first moved here.
Okay, and you were just completing your PhD from Yale.
That's correct.
So Harvard, Yale, how did you two meet?
We met as undergrads at Stanford between our sorority and fraternity, believe it or not.
So you were college students and boyfriend, girlfriend at Stanford, and then you each went to separate universities, though, for your advanced graduate work.
Well, Allison is actually not only wiser, but also older than I am. She's a year older, so she finished a year before I did. And then I also did my master's degree at Ohio University. So for 1 year, she was at Harvard and I was still at Stanford. Then 1 year, she was at Harvard and I was in Ohio. And then I started at Yale, and she was able to move down to Yale. And then we would alternate living between New Haven and Cambridge. They're not far apart.
Okay. You just kept moving east till you got closer to her.
Correct. Correct. And then we decided to come to the Midwest.
Right. We went out west.
And then at what point were you married?
We got married just before I finished my PhD in 98.
Oh, okay. So while you were in graduate school.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Because we knew if we get married in graduate school, we could take a long honeymoon. Right? It's a lot easier to do that.
Right.
Well, so that was 1998. So that's,
And then you you got the invitation to come here to the University
of
Wisconsin.
That's right. And we were very fortunate and feel we've been very blessed. This was a fantastic place to start a career, to start two careers, a fantastic place to start a family. And we have no regrets, and in fact, have, I think, loved every minute in Madison. We leave feeling very fortunate and very proud and very loyal to this great community, and it is a great community, Carol.
Well, there is a great sadness on the part of many, many people in this community that you are both leaving, but we, of course, all wish you the best, and not to forget the Badgers, just because
you're down in Texas.
And Allison, let me talk to you first, because Jeremy always gets a chance to have the first word, and I think it's your turn this time.
Not at home, Carol.
Not at home. Okay, so I want to talk about this new position that you are now undertaking, Director of Strategic Planning for the Dell Social Innovation Competition. This shows where private industry is actually funding an academic process. And tell me about that, because I know you were telling me a little bit before we were on the air, and it's fascinating.
Sure. The competition is a really exciting opportunity. It's an exciting opportunity, not just professionally, but an opportunity to open students' minds to new ways of thinking, new ways of applying their talents. What the goal of the competition is to promote what we call social entrepreneurship among undergrads and graduate students around the world. And so they come up with creative projects that provide social good that are also fiscally sustainable and scalable. And it's a wonderful way for students all over the world to think about how can I make a difference, not just make money, but really make a difference. And we have so many problems in the world. It's a wonderful, innovative way to approach how we solve them.
It sounds like a combination of social justice and good business practices.
In a way, might help if I give you an example of one of the winning projects from the competition. So this year, the third place team was a team out of New Delhi that was providing a market for sanitary napkins in Delhi's slums. And it was a really interesting project. They were training women to sell sanitary napkins in the slums of Delhi to other women there. So it takes care of a lot of taboos there, provides a health benefit. These were recyclable. And the women who were selling them were getting an income. And they did this simply by making arrangements with the product suppliers to provide it at low cost. But it was an innovative way of thinking about how you get this product to market. It's financially sustainable over time as well.
So you needed they needed the cooperation of the supplier to provide the product at a low cost.
Sure, but it opens a big market for the supplier, which if they have the economies of scale, also provides a benefit to the supplier.
So it's a good investment, kind of venture capital into the social needs. And then were they able to talk to women, expand their conversation about women's health?
Yeah, they part of what they do is in educating the women who play the role of salesperson, they also teach them about reproductive health and other issues of women's health, which tend to culturally not be the norm of what they talk about in those places.
Do they make a profit, or is this a goal that eventually this will make
profitable?
Well,
the women who sell the sanitary napkins to the other women do make an income from it, and the business itself is not necessarily trying to make loads of money, but trying to just help itself to scale to help other places. But
do they hope at some point that it becomes economically sustainable?
I think it will be economically sustainable, pretty quickly, the way that it's set up. I don't have all the details. I haven't started yet.
You're just, you know what it is, and you haven't gotten some of the real-life experiences. But is it just University of Texas at Austin students that can participate?
No, there are students from all over the world. So the winning team was a combination of a student from LSE and from Kenya. The team I just mentioned was the third place team, and that was a team from New Delhi. And the second place was a team of Malian brothers who were studying in the U.S. So we have teams from all over the world. 1,400 teams applied this year for the competition, and we're going to be building that over the next 5 years.
And how do people find out about it?
I think the website is DellSocialInnovationCompetition.com or DellSocialInnovation.com. One of those two will get you there. And it's open to all undergrads and graduate students, and it's a really nice way to build some skills. And we're going to be building a whole new learning community to help students get the entrepreneurial skills and windows into the cultures and places where they're doing things. They also do things in the U.S. as well.
Could be that you have some University of Wisconsin-Madison students part of a team participating in one of these competitions.
Yeah, before I go, I've been talking to a number of people. Madison would be a great candidate to be one of our partners.
Yes, it seems like it's part of the personality or the ambience of this university campus to participate in things like
this.
Yeah,
and I have a number of those irons in the pot, and I'm really excited to work with UW-Madison and get them engaged with this project.
Well, just from hearing it on a superficial way, certainly not having in-depth knowledge, it does seem to me like the combination of the social justice and business, and just like sports and academics can fit together and actually work in synergy, that combining both the social needs and then the business and participation just makes for a better world.
Absolutely.
I am so pleased to have as our guest today Professor Jeremy Suri, now the holder of the Mack Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership in Global Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin. And I shortened your title.
Was well done, Carol.
Yeah, thank you. And his wife, Allison Alter, who is Director of Strategic Planning for the Dell Social Innovation Competition, also that is housed at the University of Texas at Austin. They both were here in Madison. They are on their way to Texas now as we tape this program. So they are established in Austin while you are listening to this final conversation before they officially leave. We're going to be sorry to have them gone, but really looking forward to their continued contribution. And they are going to be returning periodically to
Madison. Absolutely.
Yeah,
especially in the summer.
Right. And then you've got some things coming up this fall, too. So we're going to stop for a break and come back and continue our conversation with Jeremy and Allison after these words from our sponsors. This segment of our program has been brought to you by Home Health United. You got a friend right here online at homehealthunited.org. I'm Carol Kobe, and you're listening to All About Living on Madison 1670 WTDY.
This is All About Living with Carol Kolbe, Madison 1670, WTDY.
Welcome back to All About Living. Our loss here in Madison, Wisconsin is Texas's gain. And my guests today on the program are Professor Jeremy Suri, a former history professor here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and his wife, Allison Alter, who was former development director for the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters. Both of them have been pulled away to University of Texas at Austin, who were eager to get their great talents and abilities. And Allison will be the, and is now, starting this fall, the Director of Strategic Planning for the Dell Social Innovation Competition at Texas. And Jeremy is the first holder of the Mack Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership and Global Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin. After 10 years in Madison, they have left us, but not before they stopped by for a visit while they were waiting for the moving truck to arrive and take their things to Texas. So this is taped right before their move to Texas, and we're just so pleased that you found time. I know how hectic moving is, and found time in your schedule to
Carol,
be here.
Carol, we wouldn't miss your show for the world, and we hope you'll continue to have us on in the future.
Well, absolutely. You know, there's always telephone, but I know you're planning visits back.
Absolutely.
Back to Madison. You have, besides your acclaim as a wonderful professor, I have to read what one student said about you. One student's impression of Jeremy Suri, and this is a UW-Madison student: extremely competent, heavy workload, fascinating perspective, very thorough. One suspicion: Jeremy Suri does not sleep. No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
Well, there are too many exciting things to do in life. I mean, one of the things, Carol, that I always loved about Madison is the range of interesting and exciting activities that are accessible. A lot of big cities, I grew up in New York, have a lot of things going on. A city like New York actually has more going on than a city like Madison, but it's often very hard to access those things because they're so expensive, because the population is so segmented, because things are hard to get to. One of the great advantages Madison has is it has this real wealth of interesting people. So why sleep? We should take advantage
of this, right? And with the university here, this global university, research university. My husband and I were just thrilled last week. We went down to the new Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery.
Isn't that wonderful, that building? Yes.
And heard this lecture that had come in on global health and the World Health Organization.
Yes.
And it's 15 minutes from our house.
Absolutely.
We park and we walk in, and it doesn't cost anything. And we pinched ourselves to have this opportunity. Sometimes in your own backyard, you don't take advantage of what is here.
Right.
So we're doing our best to try to find out, you know, what's going on.
And for all the difficulties the university's had, I mean, it deserves credit. That lecture is part of a global health initiative that Provost Paul DeLuca and prior Chancellor Betty Martin and others kicked off to bring faculty around campus and graduate students and people from off campus together to talk about one of the most pressing challenges we face in the world today, which is providing global health access for people in poor countries, but also in wealthy countries as well. And that lecture is part of a series of events, and I was very privileged to be part of this process, and it speaks well for our university that even in these difficult times, it's able to put together events like that.
Well, absolutely, and I suspect, I have no question that those will continue.
Yes.
I want to take advantage of picking your brain a little bit. I recently also had the opportunity to hear you speak at a luncheon, and you were very global in your thoughts and visionary and strategic and not talking about anything, any specific thing when you talked about just generally that communities are at risk today.
I think so.
And I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about that, because some of the points you made were really thought-provoking, and there are things that we can incorporate in our own daily lives to improve our conversations and to look with a better perspective on the world and how we all fit in it together, diverse as we are.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think one of the biggest challenges we face, Carol, is that people are so busy and so segmented in their lives that they don't talk very often to people who are different from whom they are. It used to be, if we said that 40 years ago, we'd be talking about race or religion, maybe. Now people are more integrated, though still not enough, across race and across religion, but they're not very integrated in terms of class and in terms of the actual professions they're in. Allison and I just had dinner a few nights ago with a friend of ours who's a physician. Actually, he's a surgeon. And he was telling us, he's also a Stanford grad, that's how we know him. He was telling us how different the community of surgeons and doctors are in their politics, in their views of issues, from the community of academics we've introduced him to. We might live only a few blocks away from each other, but we don't actually interact very much. So we don't understand their perspective. They don't understand our perspective. And the same could be said if you were comparing faculty to business people in Madison, if you were comparing Madison to La Crosse and other parts of the state. And I think we need to work harder to get people across areas to talk to one another, because otherwise we're going to remain so polarized and we're not going to work together as a society.
I think it's at a peak, our polarization right now. Isn't this unusual, this extent of polarization and people not speaking to each other, or they just speak at each other in loud voices? And
it's certainly at a height. I think we've been through this before. I think American society is a society that often has people divided along viewpoints, especially regarding things like taxation. But I think what's happened now is some of this division has been magnified by the kind of media world we operate in and the kinds of professional worlds where a lot of the informal networks that used to operate behind the scenes aren't there operating. Which is to say that people who might be on opposite sides politically aren't going out and having coffee together.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's harder to make deals. So the polarization is part of the problem. I wouldn't mind our being so polarized if there were real debates and then we made real deals.
But your point was that we have access to a lot of information, but the sensational crowds out anything substantive.
I think the sensational does. I think also just the amount of information. We're overwhelmed. Everyone gets too many emails in a day. Everyone can get too many facts about whatever it is that they're interested in. It's how you interpret those facts. And when you're bombarded with so much information, you often crave, just as a human being, I think, you crave simplistic explanations to make sense of it all. And the world isn't simple. The world is very complex. Our budget problems are not because of taxation alone or because of entitlements alone. It's a combination of those issues. But when you're bombarded with so much information, it's hard not to choose a very strong perspective on these issues.
Well, how do you weigh the information then?
I think one of the most important things is to listen to people who have different perspectives and try to respect their different perspectives and find a position that takes account of them. It doesn't always mean you're compromising, but you have to hear different points of view. You have to hear different interpretations. This is what I always try to do as a professor. I don't actually care if my students come out of a course agreeing or disagreeing with the position I take on the Cold War or World War II, but I want them to hear and think about multiple positions on important issues that they hadn't heard before, and as a good citizen, to be able to weigh those and come to a judgment that's personal but respectful of different points of view. That's what community does. I don't think everyone in a community has to agree, Carol, but I think everyone in a community respects other points of view and gives those other points of view due at a time of decision making.
How do you go about it? It's easier said than done. We've been told all our lives to stay away from two things amongst friends, religion and politics and conversations. I don't think that we're at a point in our existence that we can do that we really need to be informed and know what other perspectives are.
Absolutely.
And so maybe that's not the best advice at all.
It was advice I never followed, actually.
So how do you go about having reasonable conversations that don't try people's emotions and break up friendships?
Well, I think we have to be a little intentional about it. It's not just going to naturally happen. You might get lucky and you might have a neighbor who has a different point of view, but you enjoy playing golf together or tennis. But generally it doesn't spontaneously happen, even when you're living cheek by jowl. I think what's very important is that one makes efforts, which is to schedule time and schedule events and schedule meetings that actually bring people together. It's something I tried to do in my own small way at the university. I was very, just out of personal interest, very keen to bring together friends of mine who might have been former Democratic Party activists and others with people I met who might not have been my friends before who were in the business community in Madison. And we even organized an outing once a month. We'd get together and have beer. We'd choose a different bar in town. And we would sit down and we would begin by saying, we're going to talk about politics and religion, but we're going to talk about it. And we're going to hear different points of view. And then after a while, we started bringing in former students of mine who were staffers. During the height of the protests, I had students of mine who are now staffers working for Republicans and Democrats in the legislature who would come and sit with us. These were not the legislators, but they're staffers, you know, the 22-year-olds who do all the work for them. And these conversations actually were civil. These conversations were worthwhile. And I think everyone came out appreciating at least the other side a little more. Over the long term, if you keep those conversations going over 3-4 years, that makes a real difference. That's the beauty of something I think like Rotary or Elks. I mean, these organizations are incredibly important because they bring people together. You might share a networking interest in business, but you're in different businesses and often have different points of view. This has to be intentional. We have to build this into our lives. We have to put resources toward it. We have to encourage it. And most of all, Carol, the figures in our society who are figures of respect, academics, politicians, business leaders, they need to model this behavior. I'm very frustrated to hear people like that talking and touting the fact they only talk to people who agree with them. Shame on them.
Well, and then if somebody disagrees, that's somebody's fault. It's always one person's fault or another person's fault. One of the leaders out there that they're responsible for whatever, you know, complexities are going on and decisions that aren't being made.
Right. And I think my perspective is there are scoundrels in the world, but most of the problems are not because of scoundrels. Most of the problems are because of people making decisions that don't take account of points of view they should take account of and that are not strategic in the sense that they're not thinking about the long-term consequences. It's very easy to please a small constituency in the short run. That's the let them eat cake, right?
Mm-hmm.
The hard part, right, is over the long term bringing constituencies together. That's what real leadership is about. That's what someone like a Franklin Roosevelt did in our society. And I think there are lots of potential Franklin Roosevelts out there.
Anything to add to this, Allison?
I think one of the things that we have in Madison and Wisconsin more generally is an opportunity to explore different points of view, just like you mentioned with the lectures. And I will put a plug in for the Academy, which is a nonprofit organization that's nonpartisan, which precisely tries to bring people together from all sides to talk about the real challenges that Wisconsin faces. One of the things that we're doing that I think is a time when we have an opportunity as a country, as a city, to think about things is the Academy is putting together a program on 9/11. It's 10 years since 9/11, and it's a time when we as a society can think about not just where we've been, but where we want to be. And it, you know, there are some provocations that will come with this anniversary where we can really assess where we're at and what we need to do, and taking advantage of those kinds of opportunities to think differently and explore different ideas and create that time to reflect, I think, is really important.
We're not going to stop for another break. And on that note, thinking about, you asked the question, you know, what do we want to become and who do we want to be? And maybe, and I think you even said this in your presentation, Jeremy, that we have to answer those kinds of questions before we can determine our position on anything.
Absolutely. You have to know why you're doing what you're doing before you decide what you're doing.
Well, we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about this after this break here on All About Living on 1670 WTDY. This segment of our program has been brought to you by Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, where expertise with compassion is powerful medicine. And we'll be right back after these messages.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670. WTDY.
Welcome back to our program. My guests today are former UW history professor Jeremy Surrey and his wife Allison Alter, who is former development director for the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters here at UW-Madison. Both of them are now at the University of Texas at Austin. And we're taping this program as they are in the process of moving to Texas, but now they are already established as you're listening to them. And Jeremy is the first holder of the Mack Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership in Global Affairs, and Allison is at the University of Texas at Austin, heading up the strategic planning for the Dell Social Innovation Competition, which kind of combines social justice with business practices. Teams from around the country, academic teams, apply for this, and they look to areas of need and how products and services from business can supply can really address those needs, such as the one you were describing with a third place winner. A team was supplying sanitary napkins in New Delhi, India, and at the same time talking about women's health as these women were selling these products. So it was business and education at the same time.
Yeah.
Is that kind of it in a capsule with...
Sure. It's actually open to the whole world. And you just have to be an undergrad or graduate student at a college or university anywhere in the world. It's not just the U.S.
It happens to be housed at the university.
Yeah, the competition is run out of
UTF. So anyway,
it's a very exciting opportunity for students. And I hope if there are any students listening or parents or grandparents that they'll encourage them to think about applying their talents in an interesting way. Socially relevant way.
Well, these challenging, complex times are birthing a lot of creativity and new ways of thinking about things.
I think that's right. I think that the best thing to do is to turn crisis into opportunity.
Yeah. Well, and that seems to be, you know, people are coming up with different ways of doing
things.
Make
some lemonade.
Yeah. Pardon?
Make some lemonade.
Yeah. Trying to anyway, but it's a process. And we are really under the control of the people that we put in office.
That's right.
Our political leaders. The compromise used to be the mainstay, kind of the foundation of what pulled politics and politicians together. And that seems to be a bad word right now. And talk to me a little bit about the value of compromise and whether that's good and who we are putting in office and the impact that has on what's going on today.
Well, I think compromise is the bread and butter of politics, because rule number one in politics, which would be rule number one in life, too, because life is politics, is you can't always get what you want. Right? The Rolling Stones understood that, maybe not
I'll
in their
remind
behavior.
You of that.
And so it's a matter of trying to maximize benefits for as many people as possible. Now, sometimes you can have bad compromises. It can be bad. It was probably bad, even though it's understandable why, but it was probably bad to try to compromise with Hitler in the mid-1930s. It was probably bad at some moments to try to compromise with a Stalin figure. So compromise in and of itself is not valuable. But what compromise indicates is that political success and strategy requires the willingness to work with people who see the world differently and to find mutual benefits between them. And any successful business person I've met says that is rule number one of business as well. What I think has changed in our politics, at least temporarily and hopefully only temporarily, is that a lot of people go into office now determined to protect a certain outcome, not a process of finding the right outcome. Mm-hmm. And I think the most effective politicians historically are those who go into office without actually a clear sense of where it's going to come out, but a belief in ways of conducting a process that helps a society figure out the best possible outcome that will involve some compromise, but maybe also at some moment standing up for certain things. So Abraham Lincoln would be a great example of this. Yes, he was personally opposed to slavery, but he did not enter the presidency committed to fighting a war to end slavery, and was willing to make and offered many compromises along the lines. He created a process that unified part of the nation first, and then provided the basis for a successful eradication of those in the other part of the nation that wanted to destroy that nation. But he didn't know exactly where it was going to come out. He learned and changed while he was in office. The great senators of the mid-20th century, the great governors of the mid-20th century were people who did this. The Wisconsin idea itself grew out of a process of Wisconsinites grappling with different problems in a changing economy, different problems with labor, different problems and opportunities, with a world that had new threats in it. And that's really what politics has to be about. I'm very discouraged by people on both sides of the aisle who seem to come into office to defend a position, not to defend a nation, and not to actually seek to build a process that produces good outcomes, including compromises.
Well, and this last debate, they went into the debate signing a pledge in advance. Some of them did.
Yeah.
That they were going to hold their ground on a particular issue and not change. Well, how can you get into an honest debate if you've already made up your mind beforehand?
That's right. That's right.
And, put the emphasis a little bit less on the vision. I mean, saying you want no new taxes or you won't touch entitlements is not a vision of the world in which we want to live in. You have to sit down and think, where do we need to invest? How are we going to get there? And by simply giving priority to one mechanism on the left or the right, I think both sides are guilty of this, you're not going to get to where you might want to be because you haven't put any thought into where you want to go.
You haven't answered the questions yet, the big questions. And depending on what those answers are, then you have to make the decisions that make those answers happen. And in your presentation, you said, how have we best spent our money? That's one of the questions we should be asking ourselves. Yeah. And who and how should we be spending our money? What are our values? What is our vision now that we're experiencing what we are now? And the question marks about entitlements and taxes and deficits and debts and all of that are coming into play. Where should our money be spent?
Well, and these are not questions that are always easy to answer, but there are certain things, it seems to me, that are easy to answer. So if you take a look at the state of Wisconsin, which is a state that for the last 100 years has punched above its weight, it is a relatively small state. It is a relatively modest state in its resource endowments, right? But it's a state that has had a major presence in our society. And there are a number of things you could point to, but one above all would be to say that it has a world-class university that almost no other state can match, even states that are much, much bigger, right? Historically, the University of Wisconsin has been a better university than the University of Texas, for example, and Texas is a much bigger state. So it would seem to me that if you wanted to talk about how you would spend your money wisely, one thing you would want to do would be to support a world-class institution. Doesn't mean you have to like everything it does, and doesn't mean there shouldn't be some reforms. But when people go around the state emphasizing the importance of cutting this institution and in some ways killing it and in some ways trying to hurt its leadership, things I heard over the last year from many people, that to me shows that you're interested in getting a particular short-term outcome and not thinking about broader policies and processes that will serve the state. If the University of Wisconsin-Madison goes down the tubes, so does the state of Wisconsin. It's as simple as that. I mean, there aren't that many institutions that make this state what it is. And for people to lose sight of that, just as for people to lose sight of how important it is for people around the world to know that we pay our debts, for people to lose sight of that shows that they've gotten caught up with short-term issues and not a broader method of problem solving.
In addition to the University of Wisconsin, Allison, you have two young children, and they're in the education system, and they have been here in Madison and now going to Texas. But what is the total role of education as we begin to answer these questions about what we want our society to be? Where do we want our money to go? Where is it important? Where are the best payoffs?
Well, I think we have some really hard questions. I mean, you spend fortunes to keep people alive at very old ages in nursing homes where they're not living great lives, but we spend very little on the education of our children. And that's a difficult choice, and I'm not saying that I have an answer, but I think there are trade-offs, and we have to recognize that we have trade-offs that we have to make and that we can decide, and we have to make choices. Not deciding is a decision, and I don't think we as a society understand that by just going with the status quo and not making the decisions, that we're still making choices, and they have big impacts down the line for our children and our grandchildren.
When you look at trying to answer that question, how should we be spending our money? What are our values as a nation?
Well, think about corrections. Wisconsin spends a huge proportion of its budget on the correction system.
More than higher education.
And, you know, we as a society, do we value the correction system or the education system? And were we to value the education system more, maybe we wouldn't need such a large correction system.
What do you know about Texas, because Texas is one of the reddest states in the country.
Absolutely.
And people have kind of teased you for, well, you're going to Texas.
That's right. I know. I've gotten quite a number of emails from people who said, oh, so you're going from the frying pan into the fire.
Right.
Well, it is the fire, since it's been over 100 for less. For 50 days of summer.
Yeah.
Well, there's no doubt that many of these issues are nationwide issues, and Wisconsin and Texas are both bellwether states because they sit in the center of the nation, and they happen to be states that are deeply connected to many parts of larger industry, many parts of larger conversations. So they are bellwethers of this, no doubt about it. I think one thing that's different about Texas, and this can cut both ways, is I think, and my impression is, let's see if this is 2 years down the line, I think people in Texas are a little more comfortable with the notion that you have to have elite institutions in the world. And I think what's precious about Wisconsin is that Wisconsinites are deeply anti-elitist. They don't like anyone to be too good or too much better than anyone else. And that's a healthy thing. That's a democratic culture in the state of Wisconsin. It certainly didn't exist in New York City where I grew up. Not in California when I was in school, and it's not in Texas either. But that democratic culture can also mean you're not willing to support those key institutions, key people, key things that help you get ahead. And I think that's an advantage Texas has right now, is that it's willing to, in tough times, still support certain institutions, and people are willing to do that. Whereas I worry about the Midwest, the upper Midwest, bringing everything down. Across-the-board cuts are a disaster. We have to cut in our society. We're spending too much. But you can't cut things across the board. You've got to figure out what you value and support that, and what you don't value quite as much and that you're willing to live without. And here's where I agree with Allison's point about corrections. And I'm a law and order guy, but I also think you have to look at things and say, well, there's got to be a way when we don't have enough money to protect some of what we care about with education, what we care about with infrastructure, and not spend as much as we spend on locking people up. Mm-hmm. The fact we spend more on that now than we do on higher education is shameful. And the fact that there are more African-American men in Milwaukee who will go to prison than go to college, that's also shameful.
When you look at Wisconsin's history, we really do stand alone and apart as being the innovators in so many social policies became national. And I think that's why the whole nation is looking at Wisconsin and what happens here, because what happens in Wisconsin could happen in the nation, because we have been such leaders across the board.
Absolutely. And a very positive thing that's come out of the last year that we should emphasize is many people around the state have become interested, have become politically active in a way they weren't before. We still look very polarized, but we're more participatory. And I feel that's a good thing. I hope more young people will go out and vote.
How about running for office? Good people running for office.
Well, and we need better people to run for office, too. This comes back to what we were discussing before, Carol, that you brought up so well, which is that there tends to be less compromise, less of the kinds of savvy deal-making that's necessary for politics to function. Our society has been a great society because we have generally had a better government than most other societies in the world. We've generally had a better government because we've had good people. Most of our leaders don't take all the money and run away. Most of our leaders find ways to work with others, and that's what we need more of.
So government isn't a bad word. A civilized nation has as a foundation a really solid government that supports its people.
Well, unless you think there's something genetic about Americans, and which is a hard case to make because my family doesn't even come from this country. Allison's family doesn't even come from this country if you go two generations back. Unless
it
you think there's some strange genetics, it has to be government. What else could it be?
And looking at those things that
culture.
Well, it's these are big, big questions, and for people just to be angry and saying they are going to do this or not going to do this, or blaming others without all of the substantive information behind them, I think we need to get into softer, longer, more substantive conversations.
More shows like yours, Carol.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. We need to stop for our final break. And I certainly enjoy having the two of you here, and I'm looking forward to more opportunities. This segment has been brought to you by Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, the Life Celebration Center. I'm Carol Kobe. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. We'll be right back.
This is All About Living with Carol Kolbe, Madison 1670, WTDY.
We have just a few minutes left with Professor Jeremy Suri and his wife Allison Alter. They are both now at the University of Texas at Austin, having been 10 years at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And we were talking about politicians and running for office and getting good people. And I just want to, I'll just make a little exclamation point in the conversation from the last segment that we were saying during the break that all of the special interests and the high-powered money going into elections doesn't help. And you, Allison, were saying what we need is?
We need campaign finance reform so good people can afford to run for office and that special interests don't control our politics.
Yeah, I agree.
Me too.
I agree. And one thing I don't want to end the program without you explaining these just a few slides that you gave out at a recent presentation, and it's talking about the uses of history for improving the present. This is in the midst of the debt ceiling controversy and debt tax revenue spending.
Right. So the point I was trying to make, which is I think what a historian can add to the conversation. Historians don't have answers for us, but historians can help frame the issues. People feel now that they're paying too much in taxes, and a lot of people feel that they need every penny of their entitlements, that they deserve it and they paid in, et cetera. You hear people say this all the time, and I respect those opinions. I deeply do. But what a historian can do is put the present condition in the frame of the last 50 to 100 years. And there are a couple of facts that come out if you look at that, and that's what this presentation was about. Right now, of our gross domestic product, we're paying about 14.8% of our gross domestic product in taxes. Historically, over the last 50 years, we paid about 18.2%. So we're actually paying historically low taxes. Every individual might not feel that. It might not be fairly apportioned. But in fact, historically, too little revenue is coming in. During our period of greatest economic growth, taxes were 18.2% of the gross domestic product, not 14.8%. Second point, on entitlements. In the 1950s and 60s, during our period of greatest economic growth, entitlements were about 2 to 3% of the GDP. Defense spending ratcheted up to 10%, which was too high. We had problems in the 1960s. Many people might remember around the time of the Vietnam War, we were spending too much money on defense. Lyndon Johnson got into trouble. Those numbers crossed in the early 70s, and now more than 10% of our GDP goes toward entitlements. That means more than one out of every $10. That's not sustainable either. Now, there's some people who still don't get enough. But that should tell us that there's too much there as well.
So the point is that we really need to look at history and look at the facts and then get in conversations with people that we don't always agree with and come together on some.
And your point about compromise. Clearly, we need to actually raise tax revenue. I don't know who from. And we need to reduce entitlement spending. We cannot move forward without some movement on those two issues.
With that said, thank you so much, Jeremy Suri, Allison Alter. Just a pleasure to have you here. I look forward to your next visit. And all the best to you in Texas. We'll miss you in Wisconsin.
Carol, we look forward to coming back.
Thank you. And thank you very much.
We'll miss Madison, too.
I'm sure you will. Thanks for listening to All About Living. Now go out and have a great rest of the weekend. I'm Carol Coby, carolcobyradio.com.